Thank you, Peter, and good morning, everyone. A number of the guest speakers so far have covered a fair bit of ground in a fairly broad sense. So what I'd like to do with my 10 to 15 minutes, although Peter, you did say to me, you know, don't worry, we've got plenty of time. That was a bit of an invitation to keep talking. Not anymore? Good. Okay. I'm going to say you could regret it.
Susan took care of it.
Yeah, Susan took care of it, yeah. Well, she's a politician. I'm going to drill down on two specific issues, one being the regional development case for specifically wind energy and give you a bit of a case study around what's happening in Victoria and the potential for regional and economic growth in relation to the industry. The other issue is around grid integration of wind, and I may even take the opportunity to answer the storage question or give my version of the storage question answer that Peter raised before. Before I drill down, you have to sit through a Pacific Hydro ad. They are the people who feed my kids. We started life in 1993 as a very small listed company. We're now very proud to be 100% Australian owned by about 3.5 million Australians via their various superannuation funds. From humble beginnings in Australia building some small hydros, we're now hell-bent on global domination of the renewable energy industry. We can see we've developed projects in the Philippines, run a river hydro. We have built some small hydro projects in Fiji, which we are creating carbon credits from under the CDM mechanism, selling them into the emissions trading scheme in Europe. So early reports of its early demise are not true. It is the European emissions trading scheme is running quite well after a few teething problems. We're building hydro projects in Chile. We're starting to build our first wind farm in Brazil. We're looking into North America and Canada, and like everybody else, looking at China and India as well. So we're working in countries where they have a very good policy environment and access to CDM, these things allowing us to build clean energy infrastructure. And countries that we're in are very encouraging of clean energy infrastructure because they realise they need a balanced approach going forward. Coming back to Victoria and being more specific, under the VRET scheme that we've heard about this morning from the Minister and various others, we think there'll be about 1,000 megawatts of wind that will come out of it. So what does that actually represent for Victoria? Approximately 600 wind turbines, so not wall-to-wall stuff. Capital investments of $2 billion over the next 5 to 10 years. Annual landholder payments in the vicinity of $4.5 million. That goes directly to struggling farmers. Wind energy quite often drought-proofs their property. That's from their mouths, not ours. Operations and maintenance expenditure of around $20 million per annum. So this is really important for local communities. Pacific Hydro themselves, we have a sustainable community fund where we invest quite heavily in local activities that support social and environmental activities. That's one of the things that we've taken an extra step on. So this drives jobs in regional Australia through development, manufacturing, construction, operations and maintenance, a whole range of different other different activities. This is before we even start talking about lawyers and accountants and all the other spin doctors that hang around the industry. So it is quite a buoyant industry moving forward, driven off strong government policy. 6,000 megawatts of wind is currently at various stages of planning across the nation. So the numbers we've put up there, you multiply that by six, you can pretty quickly see that this is a substantial regional development, Australia development initiative. It's one of the main reasons why governments like Victoria have put this in place. It's a dual track, if you like. Greenhouse reduction and regional development and capacity building for the industry. Speaking of capacity building, Portland Wind Farm in Portland, surprisingly enough, is one of those projects that we're involved in quite heavily, obviously. That's spawned a number of major manufacturing facilities in Portland. The Vestas Blade Factory is employing 120 people. That's three shifts working pretty much flat out. A lot of those blades are being exported to the booming global wind energy market, to California, to Europe and so forth, China. The Keppel Prince Engineering Facility employs 250 people in its wind energy division, making towers, making embeds for foundations, finishing blades. Quite a substantial local employer for a town like Portland. This is a town that when 20 people got sacked from the local Pivot fertilizer factory, it was absolute disaster. And here we are, this new clean energy industry has created 370 new direct jobs over the last 3 to 5 years. Very substantial in a town like, in a regional town like Portland. The construction over the 2 years of the Portland project, 450 jobs. Up to 15 people once it's constructed, looking after the operations and maintenance of the wind farm. Now, people in Portland, people like Keppel Prince, are ideally located to not only service the Portland wind farm but other wind farms in Victoria and also over the border in South Australia. So this is a new industry that's opened their eyes to a lot of potential opportunities out there, and they're really grasping that. So it's a really good case study of what can actually be achieved through these sorts of mechanisms. This is pretty similar to what's happened overseas as well, where whole economies like Denmark and Germany are revolving around clean energy industries. So I hear some people in the room saying, well, what's it all going to cost? You know, the taxpayer is going to have to pay for this. Well, this is some work that Pacific Hydro and the Australian Wind Energy Association did in the lead up to the Victorian Renewable Energy Target. There's a case there for both including aluminium and not including aluminium in the target, as it turns out that aluminium wasn't a liable party. Either way, the cost to the economy by 2016, or costs flowing through to retail energy prices, is very minimal. Industrial, 4.6% increase over the next 10 years, less than half a percent a year. Commercial, 2.7%, residential, 2.3% increase over 10 years. Not substantial, particularly when you look at the regional benefits that come out of this. That's a small price to pay for a multi-billion dollar industry springing up in our backyard. This is very similar to, I guess, to the numbers that Susan put up before, very similar to the work that was done, again, by MMA for Origin Energy in the lead-up to trying to push for a higher federal MRET target, where they modelled a 5% MRET target, came out with similar sorts of numbers as an increase in retail energy prices. Not a substantial increase at all. By the way, VRET will deliver between 23 and 25 million tonnes of CO2 abated by 2020. Again, regional development, global emissions reductions. That's the regional case, if you like, and just a brief snapshot into what's going on in Victoria can be replicated around Australia. Unfortunately, we saw in Tasmania that the Vestas nacelle plant had to close down. That's not something you want to see. You want to see them expanding those sorts of things. Pacific Hydro, we want to see 2 or 3 or 4 blade factories in Australia to create some more competitive pressure and build industry capacity. The second part I'd like to drill down on is how do you integrate large chunks of wind into a grid? There's various reports on this. There's a report on this that was done by the University of New South Wales and the Australian Greenhouse Office for their federal government that a couple of years ago now, but it basically stated that you could fit between 8 and 10,000 megawatts of wind energy into Australia's grid without too many problems. And we're already seeing in South Australia that you're getting to the 10 and 15% penetrations with any particular problem being driven. This Minnesota one, it's one of the more recent ones, but one of the real strengths of it is very, very independent, very, very robust. I encourage you to go to the website that I've put down there on the bottom, download the report, and you'll see very clearly that there is no vested interest in this. It was purely the regulator wanting to understand what's going on. They modelled various scenarios. Let's pick the highest one where they're talking about a 25% penetration of retail electric sales, so 5,700 megawatts into the Minnesota grid. The Minnesota grid is about... Australia's grid is about 2.5 times the size of Minnesota. Okay, so they're looking at putting 5,700 megawatts into that grid. The sum of the results, additional 20 megawatts of regulating capacity for 5,700 megawatts of wind. No increase in contingency reserves, an increase of a maximum, increase of 12 megawatts in 5-minute variability. So wind's not doing this, it's doing this. It can be managed, it can be understood. Incremental operating costs of 11 cents per megawatt hour, 1/10 of a cent per kilowatt hour in a generation base case of 20% wind. These costs are very, very small, and this is what the report's telling us. No significant congestion issues attributable to wind generation. And this is assuming that there's some a level of transmission expansion in Minnesota. Minnesota is basically six or eight separate utilities, which are not necessarily integrated, but they're still able to come up with this model. Data was for this research, data was taken from 152 separate locations to create a five-minute simulated market. So it's very, very accurate, very, very well modelled. Australia has a five-minute market already. They were able to also accurately predict short-term, 2 to 3 hours, wind generation, which the other critical thing to this is having robust mechanisms to manage the variability and also a very good predictive model. So they've developed that. It's been developed. And pretty good medium-term, so 48 hours generation prediction and about a 10% error over 48 hours in their predictive models, which is quite outstanding when you consider what they were modelling over 152 locations. So the addition of 25% of Minnesota's retail electric sales can easily be accommodated by the electric power system in Minnesota. Australia, again, 2.5 times the size. Total integration costs across a whole range of things, including regulation, load following, unit commitment, uncertainty variability. We call it FCAS here. $4.50 a megawatt hour. It's nothing. Particularly when you think of putting 5,700 megawatts of wind into a system over 10 years, these costs are only ramping up very, very slowly. So what's required then? What are the key things that they say that we need? Geographically diverse wind scenario. I'll come back to this in a second when I show you something else. A large, they call it a MISO energy market, which is the Midwest Independent System Operator. Australia has a large energy market, about 45 to 50,000 megawatt East Coast grid. Functional consolidation of balancing authorities. We already have that. We have NEMCO. They run the market. And sufficient transmission. Now, in most cases, we have that in South Australia. We're starting to run out of power lines, but, you know, in most cases, we do have that. Let's look at Victoria in particular. This is a map of where a lot of the proposed wind farms are going to be or potentially going to be. This is just Victoria. Victoria's connected by a whole bunch of power leads as well. We've got Basslink, we've got the South Australian Connect, we've got the Snowy Interconnect. So Victoria's not an island grid. It's got a lot of other interconnects coming in. You can see if I get the pointer to work without taking someone's eye out, there's down along the coast, there's inland, there's the other side of the state as well. This is just in wind. You're getting some hydro being developed up here as well, as already been mentioned. So it looks like a geographically diverse wind scenario to me, particularly when you start to factor in South Australia, which is over here, New South Wales and Tasmania, which are all connected. Very diverse. Large energy market. Clearly large energy market that we have here, particularly when compared to Minnesota. Consolidation of balancing authorities. We have NEMCO, a single national market operator. We have sufficient transmission in most places. Can easily be done. This report and many, many others demonstrate that it can be done. This leads to me answering the question that Peter didn't ask me, which I'm going to answer anyway, which is you don't need storage for large integrated grids like this. You need a large integrated grid, you need robust management protocols and a decent predictive models, all of which we have, all of which are being developed. So if Minnesota can easily accommodate 5,700 megawatts of wind or 25% of their retail energy sales from wind energy, Australia can accommodate easily 6,000 to 8,000 megawatts of wind in a 50,000 megawatt grid. I'll leave you with that. Thank you.